Amen. So we are going to be reading from Romans. We are a little bit more lengthy than usual. We are going to be reading chapter 12, verses 9 through 21. And I do not intend to cover all of this section this morning. I know we've been going through Romans as part of our Sunday school class, and this is the 65th week. But this portion of scripture, I'm going to title Unfeigned Love, Part 1. I don't know how long we will be in here because it feels like every four words we could spend weeks upon in this section. So, starting in verse 9. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality, bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another, mind not high things, but condescend to men of low esteem or low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. You may be seated. As we have discussed in previous weeks, chapters and verses were added by men. I appreciate all the work that they've done to make the scripture searchable. And they did well. And I think that's an understatement. But a good statement, they had done well. There are some cases that people want to pull out of context, and you can't. You have to have context. But I think they did their best to distinguish scriptural thoughts and messages. But we also have to make sure that we constantly bring ourselves into reminder what the context is, what the flow is, how everything ties together. Especially when looking at the message of Paul, he does have a lot of deep items, but it does require understanding what built up to it. In Romans 1 through 11, we have heard and read the gospel of God, and you can go back and listen to the recordings if you choose to, but in a very, very general way, I'm going to try and do a quick overview to get us up to speed as quickly as possible. Paul's message is not his own. That's tough because we all have our own message that we want to put out there. And don't get me wrong, there is the flavor of the individual that delivers, and there's the method of speech, and there's the usage of the individual to bring forth the message, but it is not Paul's message. Again, I feel like everything you say can be dissected by someone listening to it. It was Paul's message because he made it his own, but the message first was the revelation of who God is. And we've dealt with this in multiple weeks now, that our revelation, even though it's our revelation, it is not individual revelation. It is made to the individual, but it is the declaration of who God is. And it doesn't change. What he has revealed and who he is who he is. And it is our responsibility that even though we have our small portion of that revelation, to feed it, to grow it, to search the scriptures, to know him, to come to the fullness of the revelation of who he is. And we might say, well, that is a pointless effort because we'll never fully understand him. Well, you may never fully understand him, but knowing more and more and more about him is not a pointless endeavor. It is truly the only fruitful endeavor we will ever have in our lives. And while looking through Romans 1 through 11, we look at God created and his works declare him, but the creature, and including man, Adam, did not worship him as creator. And we know that worship is our surface. Worship is honor and praising and is demonstrated by our actions. Our worship is demonstrated in our actions. It's not just when we come here during song service, but in other words, do we give true place to what has been revealed? And even when we haven't been faithful, God is faithful and just. And looking through the Old Testament, we looked at Abraham, we looked at Isaac, we looked at Jacob. We even looked at what we would consider not part of the body, Pharaoh, where even Pharaoh's hardening was in response to God's repeated attempt to communicate to him. And all of this points to God, who does not want sacrifices to cover actions. He wants us to seek him with our heart, to change our motives so that our actions become appropriate. The way I see it, I have a neighbor who has an old fence. It falls down. It's rotted. Now, would putting a new coat of paint on it fix it? Absolutely not. It's rotted. But look how pretty it is. All that paint covers up all that nastiness and all that rot. Yes, but it's still unacceptable because the inside is rotting. And we think we can do sacrifices, or we think we can change our behavior to whitewash our rotten fences, our rotten heart, and say, oh, look how acceptable it is, Lord. Doesn't it look nice and new? I gave my heart the landlord special. I painted over everything. It looks beautiful. Yeah, but it's still worthless. Unless we're willing to change our heart and mind to seek after him. And this is contrary to what Israel thought. They thought that they could live to the standard of the law to have right relationship. Instead of having relationship, they replaced it with a seemingly easier bar to reach. Because if I can pick and choose what laws actually apply, then I can pick and choose how appropriate I am. But missing the point that if I'm short in one aspect of the law, I'm completely short. And the fact is, the law wasn't given to beat us. The law was given to demonstrate how short we are of him, how much in need we are of him. Because let's face it, if we have dirt on our faces, we don't recognize it until someone points it out or until we see a mirror. We're happy to walk around in our current condition until there is a revelation of what is wrong and what needs to be corrected. The law says, hey, you got a problem, you're short. But the problem is the law doesn't do anything to correct it. It just reveals how short you are. The next step isn't just ignoring it, but it is looking to the author and finisher of our faith, looking to him who can do what the law could not do and redeem us. And Paul, through chapter 11, demonstrates that is up into, in including chapter 11, demonstrates that it is only in his mercy and grace that he provided himself a sacrifice to reconcile the world to himself. But if we stopped at chapter 11, we end with knowledge. If we stopped at chapter 11, we stop with just knowledge. In more recent weeks, we have looked at 2 Peter 1, 1 through 5, which is the definition of faith. And faith is your personal, intimate knowledge of the person, identity, and plan of God that enables you to discern what he intends to do so you can act in harmony with him. I'll break that down for a second because there's two more very important parts to that. First, faith is your personal, intimate knowledge of the person, identity, and plan of God. And we looked at that in 2 Peter 1 through 5, and you can go back into previous two lessons. It is the knowledge. It is one revelation. It is the measure of faith. In other words, it is what we compare ourselves to. We compare what we know to what he has revealed. And we either strip away those things that separate us, or we continue to cower in our sin. However, if we stop with just personal, intimate knowledge, it is of no effect. It is effectively useless. I'm pretty sure some of us have the old Encyclopedia Britannica in our basements that we're not quite ready to get rid of. Does that do anything for anybody? Can any of you quote any of that? Does that book in your basement make any difference upon your life? Absolutely not. It's knowledge, but it's doing nobody any good. And we looked at James 2, talking about faith being alone is dead. But that second part is, it's that knowledge of him that enables us to know what he wants us to do so that we can do it. It's action based upon the knowledge of him. That is our worship. Our worship is responding appropriately to what he has revealed. And when you truly know him, it makes what we saw in Romans 12 about reasonable service quite clear. That the actions described in Romans 12 are possible. And we looked at living sacrifice, being holy as he declares to be holy, and acceptable as coming into agreement with what he has determined to be right, and also coming into agreement with his thinking. And we looked at the renewing of the mind, that tug of war between either being conformed to this world or being transformed. And then we looked at sober thinking, and sober thinking is unimpaired, proper, on as intended, but not carnal, but measured against what he has revealed. And in previous weeks, we have come to look at how this is crucial to becoming part of his body. There are many members in the body, and each has a role. Colossians 1:17, it says, "And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence." And I'm going to give the better reading of chapter 19, "For it pleased all the fullness to dwell in him." He is the head of the body. The head of the body is where the thinking is. If we think with our hearts, as we want to be told is the appropriate thing, there's too much of a tangent to get into that. I really want to, but I'm not going to jump on that soapbox this morning, and I'll just say, is emotions are not the law. Emotions are not how you live. Emotions happen, but you need to use your bright thinking to act appropriately despite how those emotions feel. And a simple fact is, if we all want to think in our own way what is right instead of what he declares, the body does not function. Our body needs to have his mindset, otherwise there'd be a constant fight. We know what happens when the body fights against itself is we have cancers, we have health issues, we have all kinds of concerns, and the body does not function properly. And I'll say this, the beautiful thing about the body is when something is wrong, the rest of the body makes up for it until there is a healing. Do we do that? Anybody ever have a Charlie horse? If you're sleeping and you have one, I don't know about you, but I have never gone from laying down to standing up quicker in my life. I don't remember any movement other than suddenly I'm standing up. But is my reaction to pull out a knife and cut that thigh off because it's spasming out? Or do I try and walk around? Do I try and loosen it and say, what am I not providing it? Did I have enough potassium? Am I not drinking enough water? Am I taking care of it appropriately? And the rest of the body makes up the slack, but we don't cut it out because there's an issue there. We want it to heal. Now, this isn't part of my notes, but sorry, this is what we're going for right now, is when there's a hurt in the body, we don't cut it out. We don't cast it aside. We don't turn our backs on it. A body that functions says, what can we do to get you through? How can we bring you to the one who heals? Oh, you're broken? That's fine. You take the time, what you got to do, to get in right standing with him. We'll make sure the body functions. The body will function. But do we have that mindset that says, what does that body part need to function? How can I provide support? How can I provide healing? How can I take a little bit less so that more goes there? Maybe I don't need that nutrition or the blood that's going on. I can spare a little bit. I can divert of myself to make sure that the body's whole. We got to get that in our thinking, is just because someone's hurting in the church, it's not a reason to turn away from them. It is a reason to run to them and support them and say, you are part of the body and you are just as valuable as every other part of the body. What can we do to make sure that you're healed in a part? All too often we want to cut off things because we try to take the place of the brain in thinking and think that it's okay to remove things from the body. And we looked further at gifts that are given for the functioning of the body. For the functioning of the body. Not for the individual to boast of themselves, but for the edifying of the body, for the growth of the body, for the proper harmony. Prophecy, declaring his will and purpose. Ministry, service to the body. Teaching, explaining his truth. Exhortation, encouraging. Giving with simplicity, ruling with diligence, shewing mercy cheerfully. Nothing's worse than showing mercy to make yourself look good. We have way too much on it. Look at my Facebook post. I'm feeding the homeless. Look how great I am. How about you just feed the homeless? What's the thing are you trying to do? You're trying to get some kudos because you're doing something that might be considered generous? Well, then you're doing it without love. All of these things are necessary, but they must be done in accordance with what his word declares for his purpose. You know, when you go through this, there's not a whole lot of us involved, other than listening and doing. That's rough because I want it to be my thing. I want to be the one that's responsible. I, but it's not I. The focus is on what my responsibility is to all of you. And not just you in this congregation, but what is my responsibility to all of creation? How am I supposed to behave? And we get into that further, and I just want to fake it till I make it. Isn't that good enough? Right? You've heard it. Dress the part that you want. Act the way you want to be, and you'll get there. Well, you'll fool some, you'll trick others. The rest will see you for who you are. We're told to love without dissimulation. In that Greek, you can look it up and pronounce it yourself. Blue Letter Bible has a nice thing where you click on it and it'll pronounce it for you. I don't have it with me this morning, so I'll go in with the... It means without concealing one's thoughts. It means don't hide. Love is an act, but don't do it falsely. I'm going to love you because I have to. Well, I'm doing it because I've been told to owe no man anything, so I'm going to make sure I do the bare minimum to make sure that I showed love. I greeted him and told him I liked their tie, even though it was... But I showed them love, right? I made sure they felt accepted. That's what love dissimulation is. I'm checking the box. Yep, I love the brethren today. I did my duty. You know, you can't fake true love. Oh, you can get emotional, you can pretend, you can deceive yourselves, but you can't fake love. So the question is, how do you get it? Simplest is, it is not capable without his mercy. Every action that we have been told so far, every behavior, every change, becoming a living sacrifice, changing the renewing of our minds, having a proper place in the body, and loving without being false, none of it is possible without his mercy. We looked at the word by, and that word by means because of and through. So it's by his grace and by his mercy. It's not just that that is the doorway, that is the power that allows us to demonstrate his love. That if we really get into the point where we are a living sacrifice, when we start seeing things from his mindset, then we will actually start loving unfeigned. That's a difficult thing for me. I'm a check the box guy. We've been having different discussions at home about methods of thinking and how some people narrate and some people think in words and some people think in pictures and some people think three-dimensionally. I think as a checklist. That's the accountant in me. That's the A-type personality, is what do I have to do to get done with a task to move on to the next task? In the back of my head now, I'm already thinking what I have to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and how I'm going to fit in studying for next Sunday, and that's where my mind is. My mind is thinking about that. Now, I'm not going to hear and preach, let's live in the moment, and let's all take our shoes off and feel how nice the carpet is. That's just not who I am. Sorry. But if I live my life only like a checklist, then I have done the wrong thing. It doesn't matter how many things I cross off my list if I miss the point of actually having love one for another. I can fake my love. Well, you don't understand. My love language is checking things off the list. Whose love language is that? Well, that's my love language, right? I'm supposed to give you my love? Well, no, we're supposed to have his love in us. We're supposed to have his fruit in us. Our substitute fruit, our substitute love language does not take the place of what he has declared to be love. And he goes further in verse 9, says, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Boy, I'm glad he got off of that love thing real quick. If only it were so easy. I'm happy to just skip by those five words real quick. Obviously, the next part is completely disconnected. As long as I take it out of context, then I'm good to go. Right? I can move along from the love thing. The problem is the following list is a demonstration of whether or not we have love. It's actions on love that's real. Now, it doesn't describe love. We can look in 1 Corinthians for a descriptor of what love and what love is not. But this talks about some of the actions we have if we have love. So as we go through in our mind, the question for us this week is, do we truly have love without dissimulation? Do we have real love? Well, part of that is abhor that which is evil. Well, that's an old English word that we don't use that often. So I'm going to just glance over that and say evil, bad, and I can move along. Well, I would, except for that abhor word means to detest, to have a horror of, to run away from, not just, well, I'm just going to take my favorite sin and put it over here so it's still within reach of me. Evil, bad, so it's not on my person, but it's within reach whenever I need it. You know, I don't need that sin. I'm not addicted. I can quit whenever I want. Just keep it out of arm's reach. How often are we like that with our lives? Do we really turn it over to him? Do we really say, I detest it? And when I think about detesting, I think about my youngest daughter in any insect right now. Her current phase, if there's any bug, she loses her mind. And I don't blame her. It's age appropriate, and who likes bugs, especially yellow jackets? Sherry was telling me they went out the other day, and there was, I think, one yellow jacket out there, so she then spent 2 hours under a blanket hiding from yellow jackets. Now, I don't know about you, but that is some horror of the yellow jackets. That's fear, but in my mind, that's the same kind of mentality that abhor evil is. I want to get as far away from it as possible. I don't want to be anywhere near it. I don't want to just take it and put it where it's in arm's reach. I want to take it and throw it out and never see it again. Abhor, get away from it. And that word cleave to that which is good doesn't mean just to go give it a hug. Well, as long as the evil's here, I can just, as long as I have a good casual relationship with good, I can just, you know, we're good friends. I just drape my arm on good's shoulder and, you know, we're just great buddies. We get along fantastically. But then I'm going to take my arm off because I'm done cleaving now. But when I need it, I can just run over and just give it a good hug every once in a while to make myself feel good. But that word cleave means to fasten together, to become one. And I know you're going to be, what? This makes me think of wood glue. Wood glue is a bond, brings it together. Anybody ever use, I'm going to go even more glue, just because mechanical in nature. Anybody ever seen PVC piping? How it's purple? You know what that purple does? That purple cleans away the particles that shouldn't be there. It strips away the impurities. It gets both sides clean. And then when you put that cement on there, it's not just that the cement holds it together tightly. That cement actually melts the plastic. It causes it to become malleable. And when you put those pieces together, the reason you do that twist is not the same thing as Dad taking the tongs out for grilling and going click, 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 click. It's not a habit thing. It's by actually twisting it, you're causing those molecules that are melting to weld into each other to become one solid piece. And there's no taking it apart. It has been joined together chemically. It is now, for all intents and purposes, one solid surface. The only way you're going to replace that elbow is you're going to be cutting it off and putting a whole new section of pipe in. So that word cleaving unto good doesn't mean just I have a casual relationship with good that we can hang out and, you know, we do hugs and high fives and I feel great about it. It means to run away from that which is evil, but make yourself so ingrained into what is proper and what is right that that becomes who you are. It is the identity of I am now going to say this is what is right. And this reinforces what we looked at in verse 1 and verse 2. This is part of becoming that living sacrifice, is to abhor those evil things, to run to that which is good. We talked about that tug of war between being conformed to the world and being transformed by the renewing of our mind. There is no middle ground. You are either there or you are here. Because if you're cleaved, you are being welded into one piece. And if you're not, there's no middle ground. You are either cleaved or you're pretending. Same thing with the love that we have. We are either detesting that which isn't right and being fully invested what is good that it becomes part of us, or you're faking it. And you can't fake his fruit. As an aside, I want to say thank you to my wife of 21 years. We celebrated this past year. And part of our celebration, we went up to Smith College and took a look at the botanical gardens. I really enjoy botanical gardens. I know it doesn't fit any other aspect of my personality. You'd never guess it if it was a pop quiz. But I really enjoy them. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting about fruit trees is they need to be in the right climate in order to produce fruit. You see a lot of orange trees growing out here? You see a lot of lemon or lime trees growing around the neighborhood? No, you might see an occasional crab apple. If someone takes care of this stuff, you might see some apples, possibly some pears. Yes, there are nurseries you can go see them, But the biggest fruit that I'm going to be excited about around here is maybe some watermelon or some pink ladies. By the way, if you haven't a pink lady apple, it's like cotton candy. But if you take that out of this temperature, it's not going to be the same. You bring an orange fruit, yeah, maybe you can put it in a greenhouse, but that fruit is never going to be as good as if you plucked it down in Florida. I can't help but think of a trip that I made when I was a teenager with my dad to California. Pistachios. My dad loves pistachios. They're amazing. Out here, I think, let's go pre-inflation, like $6 a pound for good pistachios. Because they were grown fresh, they were amazing. We could just pull over on the side of the road and we get a bag like you were going to a county fair of popcorn for $5 of pistachios. I'm talking pounds. And we would eat so much of them that we never wanted to see a pistachio again until we saw the next stand and we stopped for more. But they were so delicious because they were grown in the right spot. You know, his fruit isn't a lukewarm fruit. We can try and take spirituality and put it in our own greenhouse and water it and try and give it some partial light, some half-truths. And, you know, you're going to get something, but it ain't going to be the real fruit. It's going to be sour. It's going to be bitter. And when people bite into it, it's going to turn them off. And they're going to say, if this is what the fruit is, I don't want it. How often, unfortunately, does that happen? When they see our false fruit and say, I don't want any part of that. If that what church is, I don't want anything to do with it. We have a wise God. He knows where we need to be planted to grow fruit that is acceptable to him. Not us. I mean, when I think of the plants we have, and I get excited if something blooms, but when you go to a garden and you see what it's supposed to look like, kind of disappointing. You know, I really want that. I want the real thing. And the same thing with our love is we got to get to the point where we can't be accepting false love. We have to accept what is true love. We have to produce true love. And the only way we're going to do that is if we follow all the steps of the pattern before. And that's coming to the knowledge of him and acting accordingly. It's our reasonable service to be living sacrifices. It's reasonable service to think like him. It is reasonable service to act appropriately within his body. It is reasonable service to detest that which is evil. It is reasonable service to cleave unto which is good. It is reasonable service. Every single thing that we go through, we can say it is reasonable service. And the next one is be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. And that kindly affection is fraternal love, familial, love of brothers and sisters or parents to children. And brotherly love is proper responses to members of the family. If you don't have proper response to how the body behaves, then you don't have love. That doesn't mean you are going to be treated kindly all the time. Now, if you have siblings, you already know this. There is a hierarchy in my siblings. I have my younger brother that I have to be half dad, half brother with. And he accepts it. I have a sister that under penalty of death, I never mess with her. Because she will cripple me emotionally, and I'm not ready to accept that fate. So the best I do is, hey, I'm not telling you what to do. Here's some advice that worked for me, but take it or leave it. I'm not telling you what to do. I love you, sister. We have those interactions with our family. But it doesn't dictate what they do, doesn't dictate how we respond. So it's having familial love, but even when that happens, when it bruises us, still responding properly how he wants to. In honor, preferring one another. Giving them the value that they are due. the honor that they are due. And it says, preferring one another, be the first to show it. You know, we have two views that I've seen on respect. Respect is earned, or you have respect. Those are two things. A lot of people say, you respect me, I respect you. Which way does that come first? If you treat me right, I will treat you right. Same thing with respect is earned, not given. It's the same thing. I will respond to you based upon how you treat me. I will treat you how you treat me. I will meet you at the lowest common denominator of humanity if you allow me. If you mistreat me, I'm willing to use that as an excuse to do the carnal things that I want to do, to show you just how carnal I am, to meet you at the lowest level. And most of the time, we'll do one better. Oh, you disrespected me? Well, I'm going to disrespect you plus one. And then it's a race to the bottom. There is nothing here that says, let them treat you like royalty first, and then you can treat them like the peasants you think they are. That's what we want to do. Don't they know who I am? Yeah, that's why they're treating you that way. Oh. Did that slip out? That's the same thing as sober thinking that we were told about. To not think highly than we should, but also to give preference. That golden rule of treat others like you want to be treated. Respect, love others, period. One personal lesson that has always stuck out. That Brother Reed out. I don't remember if he taught it, but I know it happened in circumstances. It was a discussion on marriage. If you go into marriage thinking, what is this person going to do for me and are they treating me appropriate? It's never going to work. But if you go into it with, what do I have to do to make sure that I'm demonstrating proper love to my spouse? Am I fulfilling not just my obligations? Am I doing everything necessary to meet their needs? Am I sacrificing myself? Yes, there is, what is my responsibility to it? But am I doing everything necessary to meet them? That's when it works. When it's all about me, it doesn't work. When it's all about the other person, it works. Our love to others doesn't work if we're looking for what we can get back. I don't have to give you any examples. You can see in this world, if you take a look out there, every injury, insult, and wrong is because we do not treat others as God intends us to treat others. Look back to every crisis of humanity. Look at war. Look at fighting. Look at everything that is wrong, and it's because the deference is to whatever is of myself versus to what can I do for them. Everything. Everything is, how do I benefit myself? How do I give myself greater instead of how do I show deference? Or forget deference here, not even that. How do I show love to them? All strife is because we chase the lowest common denominator. Now, I'm only halfway through my notes, and like I said, this is only part one. So we are going to stop there going through the list for today. We will continue on this next time we have next week in Sunday school, Lord willing. We will continue from here. But as we go through these, we have to continually ask ourselves, do we truly love or are we deceiving ourselves? If we truly love, if we truly want Him reproducing His fruit in us, then we need to detest which is evil. We need to cleave to that which is good. We need to show love to others, true love. And the only way we're going to do that is if we allow Him to change our thinking, we allow Him to change our behavior, we allow Him to change our motives so our motives aren't checking the box, but our motives is because they deserve love, because God loved them, and I will love them, and I will do whatever is necessary that they can see the truth that I see. So I'll end with that question. Do you have love? Pastor, will you pray a closing for our Sunday school lesson?